You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Who's been hacking aerospace firms? Context Security suggests it's a new Chinese threat actor, Avivor. The FBI issues a ransomware alert. The NCSC warns of active exploitation of vulnerable VPNs. The EU issues a sweeping takedown order to Facebook. U.S. senators ask Facebook about deepfakes. Spearfishing at the Australian National University. FireEye may be for sale. And the Sandcat threat group shows poor OPSEC. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, October 3rd, 2019. In a year where CrowdStrike finds cyber criminals more active than state-sponsored hackers, Chinese intelligence services have been taking a leading role in industrial espionage. Someone, and most signs point to China, has certainly been poking into the networks of aerospace companies and their suppliers. Airbus is the most prominent of these firms that have been so prospected. The company disclosed in January that business systems at its commercial aircraft division had been hacked and that data had been improperly accessed. Last week, Agence France-Presse, citing security sources, reported that the company had continued to sustain security incidents, several of which affected its suppliers, among them the British engine manufacturer Rolls-Royce, the French technology consultancy Expleo, and two other unidentified French companies. Most of the speculation about specific attribution has turned to APT-10, also known as Stone Panda, and which CrowdStrike earlier last month associated with the Tianjin Bureau of the Ministry of State Security, MSS for short. Other researchers thought the attackers most likely to belong to Jiangsu Province Ministry of State Security, JSSD for short. The U.S. Department of Justice has indicted members of JSSD in the past for hacking, and the group has a special interest in aerospace companies. But the London-based security firm Context believes a different threat actor is responsible. In fact, Context believes it's found a previously unremarked threat actor that's engaging in living off the land as it island hops across targets in the aerospace supply chain. They've given the group its own name. Avivor, that is, eater of birds, which seems apt for something that preys on the aerospace sector. Context acknowledges that there are some similarities among Avivor and both JSSD and Stone Panda, But they've concluded that the tactics, techniques, and procedures, infrastructure, and tooling observed differ significantly, and that while they can't rule out the involvement of the other two groups, it seems likely to them that Avivor represents a different organization. The group's attacks display good OPSEC, and the researchers note in particular the group's attention to removal of forensic artifacts, a sign of its desire to remain as obscure as possible. Contrast this with the somewhat willful noisiness of some other state actors. Fancy Bear broke onto the scene, for example, with considerable éclat, not seeming to care a great deal whether it was detected or not, and that was a matter of style, not incompetence. Whoever Avivor is, the group is probably Chinese, probably state-directed, and almost certainly concerned with industrial espionage. Israel is a major player in the cybersecurity ecosystem, with significant research and innovation originating in that country. It's also a hot market for venture capital. Yoel Leitersdorf heads up VC company YL Ventures.
Israel is the number two country in the world in terms of cybersecurity exports, and that's just one measurement. I would say it's number two in absolute numbers in terms of number of startups, cybersecurity startups. It's also number two in terms of venture capital funding in cybersecurity. And that's especially impressive since Israel only has about 8 million people, you know, much fewer than what the U.S. has and many other countries have. The total amount of funding for Israeli cybersecurity companies across all stages grew 22% from 2017 to 2018. In 2018, we had over $1 billion, actually $1.03 billion of total funding for security startups in Israel. And as I mentioned, that is number two in the world. Also in 2018, we had 66 new companies founded in Israel in cybersecurity, which is a growth of 10% over 2017. The average seed rounds are getting bigger, so $3.6 million in 2018, up from $3.3 million in 2017. Most of the new companies are in emerging fields, meaning in Israel, meaning completely new fields in cybersecurity, which is very interesting because it's not more of the same, but rather we're seeing lots of new innovation. Now you compare that with any other region in the world, and these stats are extremely impressive. I mean, especially the absolute numbers of dollars invested and number of companies formed. You don't really have that anywhere in the world except for the U.S. And think about, you know, all the different regions in the U.S. where cybersecurity is strong, like you know, the Virginia corridor, Silicon Valley, Boston, all these areas. Israel is a very, very small place, so you can get from one end to the other in terms of, you know, what's interesting in the security industry within about an hour's drive.
When you look around at the state of things when it comes to investing in cybersecurity, where do we find ourselves today?
This is a very exciting time to be in cybersecurity. I think it's one of the highest growth sectors in venture capital overall. It's driven by many factors. I mean, I could say, you know, first of all, the movement to the cloud is really increasing the security concerns that organizations have and therefore their budgets. Another one is IoT, Internet of Things. We're expected to triple the number of Internet of Things by 2025 to about 22 billion devices, and a lot of them are unprotected. You know, security spend worldwide is over $100 billion a year now, and that's growing year over year. I think by 2021 we're going to be at $133 billion, according to Gartner. The cost of cybercrime was about $600 billion in 2017, and is much higher now. You know, the number of data breaches, that's a big driver. I'm sure you've seen a lot of that. I mean, we've gone from about 800 in 2015 to about 1600 in 2017. That's in just 2 years, the doubling of the number of breaches. And security is now a top topic in boards of directors. And of course, there's a big shortage of cybersecurity professionals, about 3 million people that are needed worldwide. And so, you know, all these are driving demand for cybersecurity. And of course, the business we're in is investing in cybersecurity startups, that are meeting this demand. So, I mean, our whole goal and reason for existence here is to supply the world with some great solutions. In our case, these solutions originate in Israel, which is the number two exporter in the world in terms of security solutions. So that's, you know, that's the world that we're in.
That's Yoav Leidersdorf of YL Ventures. There have been some official warnings of cyber threats in both Britain and the U.S. The U.S. FBI has issued an alert that ransomware represents a high-impact threat. The Bureau urges victims to report the incidents to their local FBI field office, and it strongly recommends that no one pay the ransom. Doing so at this point is simply fueling the bandit economy that keeps ransomware in circulation. The UK's National Cybersecurity Centre warns of pervasive exploitation of widely used VPNs. They're not scrub VPNs either, but rather the products of respected vendors Pulse Secure, Palo Alto Networks, and Fortinet. Both British and international organizations are being targeted, and the NCSC says the victims include government, military, academic, business, and healthcare organizations. They advise everyone using the affected VPNs apply the latest patches, and all three vendors have them, and reset their authentication credentials. The New York Times reports that the European Court of Justice ruled today that national courts may order Facebook to take down and restrict access to content globally. The case originated with an Austrian Green Party politician who requested removal of unflattering comments an unnamed individual had posted to a personal page. The plaintiff alleged that three bits of content were impermissibly objectionable. Specifically, she objected to traitor of the people, corrupt clod, and fascist. The decision is sweeping and will have the effect of pushing social networks toward treatment like publishers as opposed to common carriers. Skeptics note that European law has tended to restrict disrespectful posts about politicians more readily than it has quelled extremism or invasions of pure personal privacy. But then it stands to reason that politicians might just be better resourced than your average Zuzi Musterfrau or Janie Sixpack. Facebook is also receiving attention across the Atlantic. The social network yesterday received a letter from U.S. Senators Warner, Democrat of Virginia, and Rubio, Republican of Florida, asking for an explanation of its policies and technical capabilities with respect to deepfakes and fabricated news generally. An Australian National University review of its data breach concludes that the hackers got in by spearfishing a senior member of the university's staff. The Australian Financial Review reports that ANU declined to name a culprit, but called the attackers sophisticated and probably interested in fraud. 10 Daily says the phishing victim simply previewed the email and didn't interact with it in any other way. Business Insider says FireEye has retained Goldman Sachs as the security company explores putting itself up for sale. FireEye stock has been up on the news, trading around $14 since it broke. The likeliest buyers are thought to be private equity investors. And finally, to return to the issues of OPSEC and state-directed threat groups, here's one that seems decidedly not to have its security house in order. It's the group security researchers at Kaspersky calls Sandcat, which is believed to be a cyber operations unit of Uzbekistan's State Security Service, the SSS, which inherited a reputation for repression and brutality with its KGB DNA. Kaspersky described its findings to Vice. First of all, Sandcat used the name of an associated military group to register one of the domains used in its infrastructure. This is held to be bad by those in the business. If you're registering a domain, use some anodyne but plausible front organization, maybe the Young Persons Chess Clubs of Greater Bukhara. Second of all, they had installed Kaspersky security software in their systems, and that software is reckoned both effective and intrusive, with a pretty big footprint in the systems it protects. Thus, Kaspersky had pretty good visibility into things that would raise any security eyebrows, like buying a bunch of zero days from third parties. So the gaffe was blown pretty quickly. Kaspersky researchers said they were surprised to see that Uzbekistan's SSS had any cyber operational capability at all. Some of that can be written off to the casual disregard with which the Central Asian members of the Near Abroad tend to be disregarded, but those who have eyes to see, let them see. The researcher known as Phineas Fisher said in 2015 that he'd found a good bit of email correspondence between the Uzbek organs and the Italian lawful intercept firm of Hacking Team.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Craig Williams. He's the head of Talos Outreach at Cisco. Craig, great to have you back. You all recently published some information. There's a blog post titled Open Document Format Creates Twist in Maldoc Landscape. What's going on here?
Well, so this is a very interesting one, right? You know, we've all known Maldocs exist, and we all know that you need to be worried about them. But what this particular attacker did was very, very clever. They found an issue and an open office format called ODT or open document. Mm-hmm. And they were able to, basically discover that if you exploited the ODT file type, not only were you able to compromise open office, but Microsoft Office would actually fall victim to the same or a very similar bug, resulting in them getting the execution that they wanted.
Hmm.
So think about this, right? You get an ODT file, and let's say you're super savvy, right? And maybe even your security software warns you, or you know that ODT is open office. And so you think, ha ha ha, silly hacker, I run Microsoft Office. I'm far superior and can't be compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might click on it to see what it is, because you know deep down that you're not running any sort of open software, and so therefore you shouldn't be vulnerable. However, that's not the case here. And so I think by using this format to target both sets of victims, the attacker actually has a much wider net than we would normally consider. And because it's an ODT format, a lot of the detection technology, particularly in things like antivirus, may not actually work as effectively as they should.
Hmm. Now, do you have a sense that this is an intentional misdirection, or is it a happy accident for them that that's effective within the actual Microsoft environment?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that this is intentional.
Okay.
The things that they're using are things like PowerShell that are very generically used in Word attacks. And so I think what happened was they basically found a particular technique that worked in both and decided to make use of it. Because it does double your potential pool of victims.
Hmm. So what are we looking at here in terms of recommended protections?
Well, the gist of it here is, the same type of advice we would give anyone for a malicious document campaign. I mean, number one, don't ever click on an email attachment unless you're confident who sent it and you know that they intentionally attached it. Mm-hmm. Number two, make sure you're running some sort of antivirus product so that if the file is known to be malware, it actually gets convicted and removed from your system before you can open it. I suppose for number three, we could throw out there, make sure you have a firewall on so that in the event you do click on it, perhaps it won't be able to reach out and grab the actual additional payload.
I see. Do you have any sense for how successful this is or how widespread it is?
So this one we think we found pretty early. We did not see a ton of attachments in our email telemetry. Now, it is possible that there were very isolated, heavily targeted pockets, like we've seen in the past, very specific industries, very specific countries. But from a global perspective, it does appear to be very limited. So hopefully we got the word out in time.
The blog post is titled "Open Document Format Creates Twist in MalDoc Landscape." Craig Williams, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Vaughn, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Ivan, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now, a word from our sponsor, Sixsense. Sixsense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With Sixsense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose Sixsense, visit sixsense.com.